Okay, is the microphone on? Thank you. Well, first of all, I'm delighted to be the first speaker on the plenary session, but even more delighted to be here in Provo, Utah. It's my second time in Utah. I came here a few years ago, but I only drove through. So it's my first time I've actually stayed in Utah. Thanks very much indeed to Professor Cole Durham for inviting me. And this is my first visit to the symposium, of course. And I hadn't realized quite what a major event this is and quite what an important series of topics you've been looking at over the last 19 years. So excuse the fact I've not been before. Also, please excuse the fact that I'm not a lawyer. And I know that Scott has been concerned about this. I'm extremely concerned about this. So any comments I make which appear to be of a legal nature, just disregard them because they are made from a complete position of ignorance. My background is in political science and international relations, and as David mentioned, I've been writing about the role of religion in those areas for about 20 years with a focus intermittently on democratization. So I was delighted to be asked to speak on the topic of religion in democratic transformations. But I want to start by commenting on what David said in the words of Tolstoy, because they're very apposite to the topic today. Don't try to pretend that you know what you don't know. And I think that we have a fascinating topic here, but I think that we know very little about how religion affects what occurs in democratic processes. It's largely because religion itself is a term which we need to unpack to make it operational. And what religion means in country A doesn't necessarily mean the same thing in country B. Democratization and democracy themselves mean different things in different places. And one of the sub-themes I know is civil society, and that too is a topic, is an issue which is not simple and straightforward. It's a contested issue. So we're dealing with important issues, but I think that they are problematic if we try and be definitive in conclusions. So this is by way of explaining why my comments will be so open-ended and not conclusive. That's my excuse anyway. I was asked in the email to comment on are there any generalizations that can meaningfully be made about the role of religion in democratic transformations? What role has religion played at the conceptual or practical level in democratic movements? And to what extent are religious actors' goals in tension with or in harmony with the broader liberal democratic project? And asked to think about a case study, as it were, to put these issues into context. Well, I guess it's an obvious choice, but I'm going to talk not only about the Arab Spring, but certainly the Arab Spring will form the focal point of the case study. And it's for the obvious reason that the Arab Spring is of such importance, but also because the Arab Spring is such an open-ended and inconclusive series of events. It's been going on for 2 years now. And to talk about the role of religion in democratization in the Arab Spring would be an example of how difficult it is to be sure and firm about conclusions here. I have a feeling that I've gone down too many slides. No, I haven't. Okay. Well, it's 2 years since the Arab Spring started, and like many of these issues, series of issues which get a label, the Arab Spring is stuck, even though, of course, we're now 2 years into a process, and I've heard the process described as the Arab Uprising or the Arab Awakening or even the Arab Revolution. None of these terms imply that there is a clear-cut democratic process here. And I want to refer a bit later on to the third wave of democracy and the democratic transformations which occurred in Central and Eastern Europe after the fall of communism 20 years ago, and see what, if any, parallels we can draw between the Arab Spring events of today and those transformations of 20 years ago. In both of those processes, religion was an important component. But in both of those processes as well, religion was by no means a singular or clear-cut component of outcomes. Certainly we know that in Egypt and Tunisia, people we have to label Islamists, whatever that means, have achieved power via the ballot box. In Libya, on the other hand, secular actors appear to be in charge, although, as we've seen, the role of Islamists is also influential. Overall, it appears that the relationship that Islamists have with democracy in the Middle East and North Africa varies from country to country, informed by both internal, cultural, political, historical, and external factors. And I want to just draw our attention to the fact that any democratic transformation implies a coming together of both domestic and external factors and circumstances. This may be an obvious thing to say, but we sometimes tend to overlook the fact that each country that goes through a process of democratic change or even transformation is a singular case. It's hard to generalise. And certainly in the Arab Spring events, external actors have been a major, often baleful influence in outcomes. So it's just to alert us that when we talk about democratic transformations and the role of religion, we can't just assume that it's the focal point would be what occurs within a country. External factors are important too. I want to go back, however, to try and put this thing into context, because we've been looking at the role of religion in politics, religion in democratisation in recent years. But until fairly recently, we assumed that religion didn't have a role to play in political events. The idea was, of course, the notion of secularisation, the way that as countries modernise, they become less religious. Until the 1970s, we assumed that this was a key facet of modernisation. As you become modern, you lose your religion. Now, the United States, for example, was always an outlier in that particular thesis, but it appears to have enough veracity to be what I've heard described as a law of the social sciences, one of the only laws of the social sciences that secularisation occurs and religion declines in importance. We would never say that now, of course. The last 20 or 30 years have seen too many empirical events and developments for us to think that's true any longer. But it's certainly worth bearing in mind once again that when we think about the role of religion in political changes and democratisation, we are talking about a phenomenon which until fairly recently we thought was not going to be important in our deliberations. The issue of religion in democratic change has, however, intermittently been important over the last 4, 5, or 6 decades. After World War II, for example, 60 years ago now, of course, scholars of comparative politics stressed the importance of political culture in explaining success or failure of democratisation in various countries, especially influenced by US policy, including West Germany, Italy, and Japan. Religious traditions, for example, Roman Catholicism in Italy and Christian democracy in West Germany, were said to be important in the remaking of those countries' political cultures following the traumatising effects of totalitarian regimes. So even 40, 50 years ago, there's a sense that Christianity was conducive to democratisation, something that we've tended to keep as an article of belief. A few years after that, between the 1970s and the 1990s, there occurred what we will all know about, of course, the third wave of democracy, this epical event which saw dozens of countries around the world moved from various kinds of authoritarian governments to various kinds of democratic or semi-democratic regimes. This was an almost unprecedented wave of change, the third wave of democracy, and it wasn't restricted to one region or a handful of regions. This was an almost worldwide phenomenon where countries around the world, with the exception, it must be noted, of the Middle East, of the Arab countries in the Middle East, underwent a process of change, which we can call a democratic transformation. And much attention was paid to the role of religion here. It was generally assumed, once again, that Christianity was a pivotal influence in these democratic changes. And certainly the now-deceased Harvard academic Samuel Huntington made the strong argument that countries that had Christian roots, traditions, as an important component of their political cultures, were those which found themselves undergoing democratic transformations during the third wave. I use the well-known example of Poland here just to illustrate the importance of a Christian tradition and faith, even in the context of secular communism, aggressively secular communism. Christianity was seen as a major component of a different set of values which encouraged Polish people to rise up against Soviet domination. And as we also know, of course, this showed the way for other countries in Central and Eastern Europe at round about the same time. Also, at this period, there was a wave of what we might call religious deprivatization. The term deprivatization, in this sense, was coined by the Georgetown University academic Jose Casanova, and it meant, in a nutshell, that religion moved from the domain of the private to become a public actor again. So we have two parallel developments occurring in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Third wave of democracy and religious deprivatization. Now, what, if anything, did those two events have in common? Well, there's various opinions about this. Some would argue that religion was fundamental to these changes. Others would say that religion was much more tangential to these changes. Samuel Huntington argued that some religions were more amenable to democracy than others, and he made a strong argument, although not conclusive argument, that Christianity was an important component of the values necessary to make liberal democracy happen. Juan Linz and Alfred Stepan argued, however, that religion, especially Christianity, was not that important to the democratic transformations in Eastern Europe. Fred Halliday, a now deceased, well-known scholar of Muslim politics in the Middle East, argued that Islam was not the key factor in the Middle East and North Africa to explain the lack of democracy. He said that the barriers were primarily social and political, not religious, whereas Huntington had argued that Islam carried with it values which made liberal democracy almost impossible to develop. So I'm suggesting to you that the academics, the scholars of these events, differed amongst themselves as to how to explain them. The role of religion was in there, but it wasn't conclusive, it wasn't always the same everywhere, and it didn't, most people argued, mean that a certain type of religious faith would lead to a certain kind of political outcome. Now, in the Middle East and North Africa, which is important for our concerns here, because this was the only region which didn't undergo this democratic transformation in this time, the long histories of authoritarian rule, weak civil societies, and although some or all of those features might be legitimized by the state in terms of Islamic doctrine, I'm suggesting there's nothing especially Islamic about the failure to democratize. In other words, Islam is no barrier to democratization, I'm suggesting. Three propositions about religion and democracy. Religious traditions have core elements which may be more or may be less conducive to democratization and democracy. In other words, no religious tradition is emphatically pro-democracy or anti-democracy. Secondly, religious traditions are always multivocal. Yet at any given time, I'm sorry about this, the screen is sliding down. Yet at any given moment, voices in the ascendancy may be more or less receptive to or encouraging of democratization. It draws our attention to the fact that religions are broad-based with a spectrum of opinions which make up the whole view. And thirdly, religious actors rarely, if ever, determine democratization outcomes. On the other hand, they are regularly of significance in various ways for democratization, and there's a range of outcomes. This may be especially be the case in countries that have long traditions of secularization, for example, Turkey. And I'll explain more about that in the Q&A if there's a need to do so. Okay, so coming back to the Arab Spring, is it a new wave of democracy? The short answer is no. But I want to draw some parallels with the end of communism in Eastern Europe 20 years ago, because I think that these are both important series of events which we can compare in fairly useful ways. So not since the end of communism in Eastern Europe 20 years ago is the role of religion in democratization so prominent as in the Arab Spring. Whereas in Eastern Europe, it seemed to be a fairly straightforward process at the time of moving away from communism towards more or less liberal democratic transformations. Now, 20 years on, we would probably question that rather optimistic conclusion, but it seemed at the time to be a straightforward process. A simple question. What is to be the political outcome of the Arab Spring for the Arab and Muslim countries of the Middle East and North Africa, a region largely untouched by the third wave of democracy? We won't easily get a clear answer. Another question. What's the role of religion in these events? Once again, not easy to come up with a short, conclusive answer. It seems clear, however, that so far religion is not a pivotal actor in relation to democratisation in the Middle East and North Africa. Now, this begs the question of what I mean by religion here. But once again, given the fact that this is a short presentation, I will have to restrict myself to these kind of generalisations. Okay, so we know that in Egypt and Tunisia, Islamists have achieved power via the ballot box. Now, what am I saying here? I'm saying that political parties recognised as having a political appeal based in Islam got into government to the extent that they are now leading the government. But even in these countries, there's differences of view which implies there is no one Islamist viewpoint which has carried the day, but a series of Islamist viewpoints which collectively have made them the key actors in a process of change. But there's no consensus about the way forward. There is no Islam which has been invoked to carry the political changes. This is a competitive environment where Islamists compete against themselves for domination. There's no blueprint then. Islam gives us no blueprint as to how to rule once power is achieved. And whether authentically democratic regimes become ensconced or not in Egypt and Tunisia would appear to have little to do with the fact that both are strongly Muslim countries, I'm suggesting. We need to bear in mind what democracy means. At one level, at one generalisation, it means that people have the power to elect to office governments, and then later on to throw them out of office again. Democracy then can be thought of as an act of voting in which people have the sovereign right to choose government. How does religion affect how people vote? Does it mean that they will necessarily vote for a party that calls itself religious? Or does it mean that religious people, like anybody else, will balance up how effective they think the party will be against how ineffective it will be in office? And my suggestion is that even though Middle Eastern countries comprise populations that are often very religious, it doesn't mean to say that they will necessarily vote for a religious party simply because of that fact. People have other, often material considerations. And one of the reasons, of course, why the Arab Spring occurred was absolute popular despair at the way that the countries had been ruled for generations, often by small cliques based on dynastic succession. So even though many of the countries call themselves Arab socialists or some other kind of designation, they developed into big man politics where power was in the hands of small groups of elites without any representative capacity or legitimacy. Jobs and welfare and a hope for the future is what people voted for. Where people vote for everywhere, the same kinds of things, I think. So I'm suggesting to you that religion may or may not be an important component in decisions that people make about political choices. It may be, it may not be. People have a range of views which they have. Religion is only one of them. To what extent can new governments deal with pressing challenges from fast-growing populations who want more jobs and improved welfare? Now, it doesn't matter whether you say you're a secular party or a religious party, unless you've got a working program which convinces people that if you're in power, you will make things better for them, why should they vote for you? They don't necessarily want more or less religion. They want more and better chances of improving their lives. So people who want beneficial changes now I'm suggesting to you the religious complexion of a government is much less important than its broad-based abilities. And this is where the beauty of democracy comes in, of course, because if they get into power, they foul up, they can be thrown out. And this is the important dimension, I think, of the democratisation process. Not so much are they religious or not, are they Islamists or not, but will they deliver? And I'm absolutely certain that in the countries of the Middle East and North Africa that are now allowing relatively free and fair elections, it will matter very little over time how religious a government is to their successes. Turkey's the archetypal case to study in this context. Turkey for the last 10 years has had a government in power which denies the label Islamist, but certainly is influenced by Islam, the AKP, the Justice and Development Party. It's presided over the longest period in modern Turkey's history of sustained economic growth. I don't just mean 1 or 2% a year. I mean 5, 6, 7, 8, 10% a year. China-style growth in Turkey for the last decade. Fantastically important for the re-election of this government. Relatively unimportant the fact that it's a moderate Islamist government. Beneficial ramifications in terms of jobs, welfare, security and votes. The last election in 2011, the ruling party gained over 50% of the votes in a free democratic election, up from the low 40s 10 years ago. So I don't think that the fact that it's a moderate Islamic party means it gets success. I think the fact it delivers material growth in a relatively broad-based way explains success. Now that for me is important in the democratic transformation process. Religion may or may not be a component in individual countries, but as a general conclusion, religion doesn't have the same kind of capacity to consistently deliver votes in the way that a party who voters believe will make their lives better can do. But this is only half the story, I think. In the Middle East and North Africa, we have a range of types of political system. There's the sort of dynastic cliques that I've talked about. This is only a handful of countries. We have the traditional monarchies, of course, another handful of countries. To complexify things further, many of the countries have oil wealth. What does oil wealth do for democratic transformations? Well, oil gives those in power the capacity to buy off dissent. If you're an oil-rich country with a small population, think Saudi Arabia, for example, you have the capacity to enable dissent to be muted because you can ensure that the dissenters have jobs. You can ensure the dissenters have a way of relieving their frustrations in material considerations. So oil means that politics is truncated, that politics are shrunk, that politics don't have the resonance in many other environments. Many of the Middle East and North African countries have civil societies which are fairly underdeveloped. And one of the truisms about democratic transformation is that civil society is an increased, very important component in bringing about democratic change. Not necessarily the consolidation of democracy, the embedding of a democratic system, but the shift from authoritarianism to democracy is often said to be carried most importantly by civil society. Think Poland again. Think Eastern Europe more generally. You have lots of examples of civil society being an important factor here. Sometimes that was religious, sometimes it wasn't. The Middle East, North Africa, doesn't have civil societies of that caliber, of that capacity. Too divided by ethnicity, by sectarian issues. The political parties are very often in name only. They've struggled to develop, to become realistic vehicles of people's aspirations. And underpinning these difficulties are the religious and ethnic divisions in most countries of the Middle East, which those in power have spent decades cultivating because it's made their job of staying in power easier. So internally, the ground is difficult for democratic transformation throughout the region. Externally, the region has become one, a major battlefield between external powers. The USA, the EU, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, they muddy the waters. They favour their groups, they disfavour other groups. It makes it very difficult to develop a coherent, consistent political trajectory. So my view is very pessimistic. I think that the most likely outcome is a slide into entrenched and long-term political instability, with some state failures and much state fragility, with serious results for regional and international instability. This has nothing to do with the fact that the region is mostly Muslim, but it does reflect the region's cultural and traditional background and the meddling of external powers, I think. So the conclusion, I think, spot on time, I hope so anyway. The relationship between religion and democratisation in the Middle East and North Africa in the context of the Arab Spring is complex, linked to both internal and external factors, and varies from country to country. In other words, difficult to talk about an Arab Spring wave of any kind, because the 20 or so countries in the region have very singular trajectories of politics, and it's very hard to generalise beyond the superficial dimension of Islam. Is a third wave of democracy, especially in Eastern Europe, a useful comparison to the Arab Spring? Probably not, because the circumstances of the end of communism 20 years ago were very different internationally than they are now. There was a great deal of support for political change from the West. The West supplied various forms of assistance to those shifts. In the Middle East and North Africa, it's much more complicated. The West is much less welcome as an actor, much less certain about how to act. And it doesn't particularly necessarily favour democratic changes, because it might bring in Islamists across the board, and that could be a Western security concern. So religious actors may be pivotal, as they were in Poland, again, to use that example. My thinking is that they won't be. So overall, then, religious actors tend to have a rather ambivalent relationship with democratisation. They're not necessarily recognised as legitimate political actors after revolution. For example, in post-communist Poland, where secular political actors quickly became prominent, and religion declined as a political voice. If there's an analogy with the Arab Spring, it may well be that religion, Islam primarily, doesn't have the capacity to be a consistent political actor in many other countries in terms of democratisation, primarily because it doesn't have a clear vision of the future which can be expressed in democratic terms. And I'll stop there, and thank you very much for your attention.